Wait, what were you going to say, Nathan?
What about instead of 100, the first 100 days in office, how about the first 100 gays in office? And instead of doing anything for the first 100 days, we just talk about how cool gay people are for like approximately the whole presidency.
That would be actually very fitting for the Biden administration, because they could get lots of woke points and at the same time do nothing. So
we'll do no policy. This is what we're going to do. We're going to boycott policy until we have at least 100 gay people in office. That is my promise as president to you.
Damn.
To make things fair for America again.
That's pretty tight.
Yeah, I think the Biden administration has been doing great, like hiring all those four-year-old lesbians to run. I don't know.
Are you talking about Pete Buttigieg?
Whoa.
Because we all know that representation equals justice, right?
Right. Actually, speaking of which, I watched Pete get sworn in, like part of it, because he's now my transportation overlord.
Rat boy.
Yeah. Well, you know, rat boy. Lots of experience in them subway tunnels.
Lord rat of the subway tunnels.
Right, right. But yeah, so I watched it, and it was like, what was so like cringe about it is like, I don't even know. It's just, I don't know why it just bothered me so much, but it's like just watching him. He's so coached. You know what I mean? It's like you just know by his responses, his demeanor, like there were like consultants hired for like six-figure salaries to just train this guy to be interviewed for a job
for sure
that he's going to get either way. You know what I mean? Like, and he's grotesquely unqualified for, if we're going to play the whole qualification games that they all love, you know what I mean? The credentialist game. That's another thing that is so wild to me about these people, is it's like, they're so into these credentials and credentialist bullshit, but like, then they just turn around and will be like, oh yeah, this guy who's, you know, not only been like a civil rights leader, but also has like 50 fucking years under his belt in transportation and land use and all this other stuff. Nah, fuck him. This guy who rat fucked Bernie out of being the nominee. Yeah, let's give him Department of Transportation for that.
And like, it is really cool to have, you know, different sorts of people, whether they're gay, lesbian, transgender people in like the cabinet and like the administration in general. Like, it is a really cool thing. It's probably like one of the only cool things that we're going to see for like a little while. And like, I'm happy. Like, I see, you know, I get kind of cute and my heart gets a little warm when I saw like, you know, some people on my timeline saying that like, you know, their kids are looking at Kamala and being like, what do you mean? Like, a woman can be vice president and stuff. And, you know, they're probably all half made up, but at the same time, like, right, I know that sentiment is there, you know, like, I know like, there is that feeling, and like people are looking at this like as young girls and shit and being like, oh wow, they're not lying, literally anything is possible, you know, or whatever. Which is, it's cool, you know, it's partly a lie, but you know, it's heartwarming, I guess.
I mean, the representation matters. It's just not, it's not a substitute for policy, and by that, it's not a substitute for material justice.
Well, it's also the fact that it's like, it's representation for a certain class of people. You know what I mean? It's like, that's, I get what you're saying, Nathan. And I get what you're saying, Matt, of course. It's just like, I think that it's they're pulling representation from a select group of people that they've allowed now in to another more elite select group of people. And I don't know. I mean, I guess for kids, you know, especially young kids, it is important, but all kids grow up, all kids see the reality of this shit, and it's, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, like I was messaging you all, you know, earlier, it's like the stack is, you know, or the ball is in their court, rather, you know, like the opportunity to do a lot of really fucking good shit, it's in their court. I mean, they have a majority in the Congress and the Senate. They have a lot of people. I mean, I'm not saying this is a good thing, because it's kind of like they're inheriting a more disastrous situation than 2008. But, you know, people are really like desperate for change and to turn a new leaf. And so there's a lot of opportunity there to do stuff like more stimulus checks or whatever that I think could help show that when government works, it works well. And another, just a whole list of things. And you have Sanders in charge of the budget chair committee, you know, all this stuff, the ball's in their court, you know, but I don't have any faith in it because I've seen them just completely, honestly, probably intentionally just drop the ball so that they don't have to do real work. And I hope they realize that they can't do that anymore. I mean, the consequences of inaction are quite severe these days, but who the fuck knows? They live in their own world.
And the thing is, too, is like we only have a very, very short time for like our 2-year limit or whatever until we're back up to doing elections again.
Right.
Right now, for example, like we just had the Senate flip. Like usually by the 6th, it's already flipped, but we actually only just had it flipped because we didn't, you know, have the full Senate until Ossoff and Warnock won the Georgia runoff elections. So we only just got the Senate, and now the Senate is going to be bogged down by an impeachment trial that Mitch McConnell asked to put off until like February. So we're like looking at essentially this sort of timeline that's really slowly closing. And if you might remember, like Trump only had 2 years of having all three, you know, of course, the executive, the Senate and the House, and he didn't get anything done with it really besides that one tax cut. So there's really not a lot of time to pass major, you know, major fucking changes. And right now a lot of it is going to be focused on like impeaching Trump and shit, which maybe you could argue is deserved, but at the same time it's like, what are our priorities? And like, are we going to actually get anything done, or are we just going to like let this pendulum swing back to the Republicans again in 2 years?
I mean, that's what I see happening. That's what seems to have always happened. And it's just another thing with like social media and all that, like with the Bernie memes that are coming out and that are just being recirculated. It just seems like a giant spectacle. Like everything is just like takes a backseat policy wise to, you know, the aesthetics and the optics of the situation or the government. Like, you know, I'm sure we'll get into a little bit of the Capitol riots and stuff like that, but it's just like a never ending shit show of, you know, optics and aesthetic performance for one side or the other. And then you have all these memes of like Joe Biden saying help is on the way. And it's just like these people, like Jared said, they live in a different reality ultimately. And there's nothing really systemic that allows them or forces them to understand that working class people live in a different reality and suffer. And I think it's just kind of a shit show. With everything going on, everything is just aesthetic, and liberals are like checking out, sitting here defending Joe Biden and all the stuff that, you know, he's done in his past and the nothing that he's planning to do or the performance that he's giving essentially. And I'm just not looking forward to the next couple years because I think this is just par for the course.
Another thing that we're sort of stuck on right now is sort of like dealing with this like insurrection sort of thing that we have going on, because you know it's just passing, and so now all these different congressmen are like supposedly involved, or now all these different people in the government are supposedly involved, and so there's like this whole new focus where like Biden not only has to, you know, do something with his presidency, but he has to fix COVID, and he has to go ahead and try to like, I don't know, clean the government out of, you know, all the white supremacists out of government and shit, which is, you know, just a impossible task as it is. So it's like, there's so many things working against anything happen that like, I'm just not super, super hopeful, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, the liberals don't even really have their finger on the pulse of what's going on anyway in the first place. So it's like their window of like acceptable effort for Biden is, you know, very contextually problematic in the first place. Like most liberals don't even understand that, you know, Trump and Biden differ really only in color, like blue tie versus red tie. Like they're ultimately both for the same class of people, and working for Wall Street, working for, you know, capital. So I think like it's going to be a tough couple years in this country, because, you know, now that Joe Biden is in office, it's going to make it even harder to get liberals to understand that, you know, capitalism is the root issue, not so much Orange Man bad or the Cheeto in the White House. Like it's a larger problem than that. And it makes it harder to propagandize. It makes it harder to get through to liberals when there is like someone in office that they can just kind of like go to sleep on. And now that, you know, Joe Biden has officially taken office and he started to, you know, put some executive orders into place, like it just, you know, I'm just anticipating them to start cracking down with like the police state apparatus. And I'm waiting for them to send out like as little money in survival checks as they possibly can, and then use that as a justification to essentially just clamp down with the security state. And I'm not really hopeful about what's going to happen. But again, this is just a cyclical thing, and it's happened so many times. Like we've lived through these cycles, and that's another thing that's profound about like the U.S. Media and just the U.S. population in general. We have such a short attention span, and we often forget like the media cycles and news cycles that we consume, and just how quickly they're repeating. And I think people are really like with social media and consumer culture, everyone's just kind of tuned out. Now that Joe Biden is in and the orange man is out, it's safe to just go back to consuming. And I think that's the MO, like that's the status quo of capitalism and liberalism and like the Democratic Party. I've never really seen the Democratic Party as a real opposition to the Republican Party. They're really just trying to, you know, cooperate with the Republicans in what is ultimately just a way for them to appear less right-wing than they are. But the whole state is just like right-wing. Like capitalism is a right-wing ideology on its face. Like, and that's one thing that, you know, makes the situation even harder to get through to liberals.
And I think that's like one of the major things that's really hard for me to face, is that like, you know, AOC types or Bernie Sanders types, they're not really popular in like the rural areas or like in a lot of the states. Like, sadly, those are not the types of people that get elected. So I really think that any socialist project right now, their main focus really has to be on making people aware, you know, which is not the best position to be in, because you want to actually make change and shit. But right now, there just is not, whether it's politically or whether it's organizing outside of politics, there's just not really like a lot of ground support on this type of thing.
Apparently Biden reversed Trump's executive order that lowered the prices for insulin and epinephrine.
Mm.
We just need to repeal Citizens United and Glass-Steagall. We can like actually have a functioning democracy.
That was one thing that I was kind of excited about, is that they did want to make any sort of like democratic reforms a priority for this, like in terms of like voting and stuff like that. I would fucking love that, just because that's the key to like consistently keeping people like Trump out of office and shit, you know? The fact of the matter is that, like, dude, Republicans are playing on easy mode. Like they absolutely have a completely overblown advantage in fucking the Senate, obviously, you know what I mean? Like with the whole, like, yeah, every state gets two senators bullshit, which is why we need like Puerto Rico and Washington DC to be in the Senate, because that's going to be like easy Democratic strongholds. And then the other thing too is like they stopped adding reps to the House, right? So like we've been stuck at like whatever it is, like 435 or whatever it's been for like the longest time. And so what's crazy is like in that situation, like the rural states still have a huge advantage because like the blue states are growing faster, right? They have more people, but like they don't always get more delegates. You know what I mean? So like the delegates have to match the same amount as the House. So like the Wyoming House is disproportionate, is more powerful per capita than the California, you know, House of Reps. So like not only do they get the Senate advantage, they also get the House of Reps advantage. And like in my opinion, they also get like the Electoral College advantage, because it seems like, you know, out of all the last elections, a Democrat has won the popular vote and it's gone to a Republican every time that they've won, at least save for like the last time Bush won against Kerry. Every other time, you know, the conservative lost the popular vote and still won the presidency, which is crazy. It's like, this is such a huge like uphill bullshit battle against fucking the worst kind of people, you know?
And just rigged systems in general. Like it's so bungled that I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'm feeling pretty cynical right now. So
I get it. I mean, there's like, I don't know. There's so many ways that I'm thinking about looking at it as it is, because it's like, part of me knows like, it's like, okay, the liberal democracy bullshit is only going to go so far. You know, I know that like, there's so many limitations to that. And there's so many like sort of things restricted, like with, you know, Bernie has to elect in, you know, like Raytheon board of executives members to be like the fucking Department of Defense guy or whatever. And it's like, yeah, all that shit sucks. So it's like, you can't really ever be like ethically pure in like politics. You know what I mean? Like there's always going to be like some kind of like bullshit compromise. But like at the moment, there's just like, there's no real base outside of politics. There's really no, I just can't, maybe there is, but I just can't see it. But I don't see like massive strikes. I don't see massive like, you know, tenants unions, or like, I don't see fucking, you know, protests that are leading to actual change or anything. It's like, sadly, the most change we get in this country right now is still through politics. So, I mean, it kind of is what it is. Like, we kind of have to use both systems to move forward, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's just, I just want healthcare. It's like,
I know.
I just want healthcare. That's the thing. It's like,
the world, I mean, yeah. And that's the thing, too, is like, I try to think of it in the terms of like, of material conditions. Like, if we are trying to get a more, like, I'm not even joking, like, vital working class. I mean, when I say vital, I mean like alive, like literally just not dying on the streets and not wasting 100% of their time at work and having enough time and shit for like, you know, learning about this shit. Like, I do feel like Democrats can make a little bit of a change, because if they can get healthcare, if they can get, you know, reforms like shorter work weeks, you know, that's not even being discussed right now. But things like that, I think, are going to lead to more of like class consciousness, you know, not necessarily on like a Marxist sense right off the bat, but like if they can start to understand like, wow, we can make changes and the world doesn't just fall apart, or like the free market just doesn't, or not the free market, but the market itself doesn't just fail because we passed a law with a higher minimum wage. Like if people could start realizing that like we can just decide things are going to be different, and they will be, like, I don't know. I think people would feel more confident going with like a more heavy handed sort of like leftist approach, but I don't know. What do I know?
I mean, I just saw a meme that was like a graph of Bernie Sanders' policies or his agenda, like all of them poll super well, like raising taxes on the wealthy, raising taxes on corporations, single payer healthcare, and free college. Like all of those things poll amazingly well with like the electorate, like the general population.
It just like some of those, like I'm not too familiar on the other ones, and they probably are really popular. But the thing is those are also sort of popular just with like Democrats in general. But like the problem with the single payer healthcare stat is that the questions will like severely change what the outcome of that answer is. So like if you just ask people flat out, like, you know, hey, like, would you want single payer healthcare? Like, it gets in like sometimes the 70s. And I think I've seen a couple that are like the 80s% of people saying yes. But when you just ask something like, would you be willing to get a tax increase to get healthcare? It like drops, like it plummets like down to less than 50% on like how many people would be willing to take a tax hike for it. And then like this, another similar scenario is like, if you ask people like, are you willing to get single payer healthcare if it means getting rid of your private insurance, which literally is the definition of single payer healthcare. So like, that's just built into what single payer healthcare would be. People like it, again, those numbers plummet in terms of like how many people support it if they think they're going to lose their private insurance, which like obviously would be part of any sort of Medicare for all type of situation, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like sadly the real support isn't there in my estimation. It's not there quite yet because, you know, while people say they want it, they also don't know exactly what it means, you know?
Yeah.
And when you do explain what it means like more thoroughly, they're not really super into it. So, you know, it's just one of those sort of like unfortunate things I was talking about earlier where it's like, sorry, like this is what it is.
You know? I think people have to be deprogrammed away from like private enterprise in general, like the private insurance companies and all that stuff. Like people need to understand that, you know, insurance companies are just middlemen keeping you from getting the care that you need. Like they serve no function other than to just be like a bureaucratic middleman for mediating these types of things. Like, and if we just had like a fund that like they do in the UK, like the National Health Service, you know what I mean? If we had something like that, like the state would pay for it through the taxes and we wouldn't even need a private market for healthcare in general. And that's one thing that I think is uniquely American, and it's so hard to break because people are under this impression culturally, mythologically, that, you know, having that private market makes things better, like there's more competition there. But I just think like people need to be deprogrammed in the sense that they need to understand that healthcare is one of those things that shouldn't be messed with. Like it shouldn't be fucked with. Like it should be guaranteed to all people as a right. Because if all people don't have access, like equal access to those things, then it creates like a hierarchy of health, which is almost kind of like eugenics in a way. That's how it acts on in society. Like if only a certain class of privileged people who can afford healthcare can get it, then that just means that it's like having good health as a privilege in a modern society where, you know, it shouldn't be and it doesn't have to be. But I think those are like the rigid hierarchies and systemic pressures of capitalism and market forces in general that I think people need to be deprogrammed from. They need to understand that those things don't mean or don't always equate to more freedom. And that's the real challenge, is getting people to be deprogrammed off of that idea that, oh, you know, I'm worried about losing my private insurance because of my employer health plan. Like if the government could match the what those plans could provide, then there would be no reason for them. And that's where the bureaucracy comes in. It's just like the state, to maintain capitalism and to maintain the market for private insurance, they'll never fully abolish private healthcare. You know what I mean? Then that's why it makes it so hard in this country specifically, with our history and our mythology and our cultural narratives, to really have a single payer system, because, you know, the corporate side of things, they don't want to deprogram for people from that. That then they lose their market niche. They lose their market. And, you know, what it comes down to for the US context, in my opinion, is just like, we can't make progress and make strides unless we fully like abolish these things and remove from public consciousness this idea that there should even be private insurance for healthcare, in my opinion.
But yeah, no, I mean, even in the instance of like, you know, getting rid of the private healthcare in favor of a public healthcare, I mean, one of the things that's even always brought up with the Democratic Party is like this notion of, well, instead meeting halfway with like a public option. But it's like, even that, I know exactly what, you know, that's going to entail, and I think we may have even talked about it on a previous episode, is that you roll out a public option, you put no funding towards it. It's sort of like an optional public option, basically, for the poorest sectors of society to pay into, who can't afford a private sector plan. And then when it doesn't work out and it fails completely, or it, you know, doesn't, or it's shabby and doesn't work as effectively as the private plans, well, then you have an option of, see, this public thing could never work, and this is why we can't have Medicare for all. So it's like, it's a really double-edged sword. It's like healthcare, it has to be an all-in thing. And, you know, at least the way I view it is, you know, I'm not a rigid, like, I don't have a rigid socialist dogmatic stance that like every single facet of society needs to be brought under government control. But there are certain things like healthcare, energy, you know, public housing, like that sort of stuff, that it just has to be ran like a public utility. It can't be a private, you know, there can't be a private component to it, because in order for the thing to work as it's intended, where all elements of society, including rich members of society, are forced to pay into this thing, then it's just not, it's not going to do its what it's intended to do effectively.
Right. But that's the root issue of that is capitalism, because capitalism says, you know, we need to protect people's rights to own property ultimately. And what that entails for the market forces and insurance and stuff like that is that, you know, we have businesses that can integrate into the market and provide products and commodities such as insurance. So, you know, with capitalism, you're always going to have that sort of fracturing of the public funding and private providing of insurance. And so that's why I just feel like a public option is kind of just like a half-assed way to appease like a non-demographic. Like it's not going to succeed at what it thinks it's going to do because of just the way the private market it works. But I think, you know, to your point, I personally believe that there are certain things that shouldn't be subject to private market forces. Like, you know, healthcare is one of those things that shouldn't be looked at as like a private commodity. It needs to be looked at like a public good, like a public utility. And I think only when we can get to that sort of like conceptual ideology and standpoint where we're all on that same page, that's the only point that we can make progress. Because until then, it's just all going to be subject to private property and private property rights. And then from that, like the market forces that, you know, want to create insurance, want to use capital to create insurance companies and all that type of stuff. So I really just don't see these like reforms being made in a real sense under capitalism, because that's what I want people to understand is like the very fact that there are private outlets for these type of things makes it next to impossible to establish a reliable and viable system of like public healthcare or a public option. Like I just see market forces under capitalism and privatization of insurance like at complete odds with this idea of making healthcare a public utility. Like, but the way that I look at it is just like, if we want to live in an equitable society, and I'm not talking like completely equal, because I don't think that even under socialism or communism, things can necessarily be 100% equal. But if we want an equitable society where all people have the same amount of like access and privilege towards certain things, to be, you know, educated, like to go to school and get a college education, to have great quality healthcare, like those things need to be considered a public good and a public utility. But therein lies the ultimate problem. This is an ideological problem that capitalism has, is that once you bring in a private market, then society no longer functions supremely for the interests of public good or the ultimate good or the best for all people, like, or the best possible life for people, or in the pursuit of happiness and justice for all of these people. Like, once you introduce private markets and capitalism, you're not as free as you think you are, because your life is always subject to the constraints of, you know, greed and other people's private interests and private property and things like that. So capitalism does not make people more free, and it doesn't make society more free. It allows you to be more competitive and more greedy, but it doesn't ultimately make society as a whole more free, and doubly so in context of this healthcare debate.
Right. And I think that really the only way to, going back to the original point, you know, the only way for us to even approach the point of, like, seriously getting a public healthcare plan enacted is if you have, you know, people trusting that government can work. And right now is the time to be doing that. And I just don't, I don't have a lot of faith in the newly elected administration to show that, based on not just the Democratic Party as a whole, but even these specific Democrats and these specific members of their administration. And obviously there's a lot of people right now who are extremely distrustful of all things, you know, government and government related, right, left, and center. And, you know, we saw that recently with, you know, I mean, not only everything that's been happening with COVID and how people have been reacting to it, but even with this, you know, the Capitol riots that happened recently and this explosion of, I mean, quite frankly, it's like, at least in our lifetime, I don't know, maybe people or you all know a better example in history of something like this happening, but at least in my lifetime, I've never seen anything like that, you know, where there were angry, you know, people who feel threatened by who was just elected, and who are politically opposed to everything that they stand for from the right, and were able to infiltrate the Capitol of the United States. Yeah. You know, what do you all think about that?
I mean, it's just kind of a testament to the fact that the liberal state apparatus just doesn't really, you know, it doesn't operate in the interests of the people. Like, there's a clear, you know, fascist bias with policing. Like, the reason that the Capitol Police didn't really do much to stop these people until it was considered like an actual threat, where people were, you know, brandishing weapons and like firing on each other, or, you know, being violent towards each other. That's the only point when they thought to enforce any type of, you know, presence or authority on these people, these, you know, Trump supporters that invaded the Capitol. Like, and I could care less, honestly, like, whether the Capitol building got invaded. Like, I have no skin in the game on that. But it's just like, it's all to me just kind of like a giant joke. And even after now that happened, and Trump was clearly responsible for inciting these people to do this, even after that, you see like articles of like Joe Biden getting a very a sincere and apologetic letter from Trump, and they're already starting to like rehabilitate Trump after everything that he did for the past 4 years, plus literally incite a fucking riot and takeover of the U.S. Capitol. Like, it's just unreal to me, like, that we've gotten to this point in our society and in our media where there is no such thing as truth. There's no such thing as justice. It's all just narrative. And it's all what can be sold to you. Like, what are you willing to buy as far as a narrative goes? What are you willing to believe? Because I guarantee you someone's willing to sell you that. And it just, it's kind of like, it's hard to really orient yourself in a sense of reality or a coherent, like, belief system or ideology or even politic at this point. Especially if you're a liberal and don't really understand society from like a class perspective, I can only imagine the type of like incoherence that, you know, right wingers, and Nathan, you were talking about earlier, like what's going on with like right wing YouTube. And even I've seen online with like some right wingers looking at the protests in like Portland with Antifa and all these different places. Like, right wingers are really having a hard time understanding like why Antifa all of a sudden hates Joe Biden and all of this stuff. Like, they legitimately think that Antifa it supports Joe Biden and that Joe Biden is a communist. And these people have no like historical context or really any type of understanding of what politics are, because they're following the media and they're following narratives which are incoherent. So ultimately, I think with the Capitol thing, it represents just like an absolute like decay into absurdity for me. But you know, I wonder what y'all think about it.
I mean, part of me struggles with like seeing the people bust into like buildings that are supposed to be like the most secure in the world. I'm like, put them down, you know, like part of me is like wants to cheer on, you know, the state suppression aspect of it. But then like another part of me wonders like, but if they were storming to like get Medicare for All passed, or if like they were storming for any sort of like normal ass atrocity that the government does all the time, like would I support it? You know what I mean? And I think like we sort of have to decide inside of ourselves, like what when is it acceptable to riot? You know what I mean? Like in this case, like the reason this is unacceptable isn't because they stormed the Capitol. The reason it's unacceptable is because they stormed the Capitol to disrupt democracy. You know, we can't look at these people and say like they're evil just because they did something crazy. It's like, well, don't we all want to do something crazy? Like, isn't that the whole goal of most of our movements, is to do something crazy? And so it's kind of like strange to chastise them for that reason solely. I think the reason you have to chastise them is like the kind of company they keep, white supremacist and like fascist and fascist adjacent types of people, and just like, you know, reactionaries in general, and chastise them for the purpose that they were there. You know what I mean? Which is like to literally disrupt the democratic process. Like, you can't find any Antifa sort of like attack on government buildings that was actually there to like disrupt the government itself. It was always just like symbolic in nature, but this one actually had sort of like an actual like material effect to it, where it really did stop what was supposed to be like, you know, the certification of elections. So like, I think you have to look at like the purpose for the riot, and you also have to look at like not just the fact it was on a government building, but like why was it on a specific government building, in this case, like I said, to stop a democratic process. So like, I think it's I don't know, like I said, don't condemn rioting in general if you're taking my advice, but just condemn like the purposes that they're being done for, you know?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of, I mean, I know many people on the left would not agree, but I think that there's a lot of nuance here. And the nuance to me is that, okay, obviously the Capitol was stormed, and it was stormed by a group of people that I have a great deal of political disagreement with. That being said, I am not going to, you know, denounce or reject my principles that I have about certain things strictly because the people doing X, Y, or Z are on the political opposition to me. And what I mean by that is what they did obviously was a crime, you know, and it's illegal to do what they did. But like you said, Nathan, had any similar protests happened for like Medicare for All or whatever, like, first of all, it would have never gotten that far. It would have been brutally crushed immediately. But even hypothetically say that it did, it's like, well, you know, what cause is noble and what cause isn't? Also, these people are like, obviously the left has been saying like, well, oh, you can't say that they were working class people because look, some of them flew in a private jet to get there. And of course that's the case. There's going to be a mixture of everything there, just like there is with any fucking protest. But I think there are a lot of people that have been led to think what they think because of very powerful people who hold real power and real political agency. You know, these people don't have that. That's part of the reason why they're storming the Capitol. You know, if there's someone who needs to be put on on trial here or needs to be held accountable. It's the people who have knowingly egged this on and aided it and abetted it through their platform and their power and their political agency. And, you know, that's what I have an issue with, because seeing people coming out and advocating, you know, further suppression and censoring and playing FBI agent by ratting on X, Y, and Z people they know who were like at the protest, not even breaking shit, but just like there. The reason I have an issue with that is because I'm sorry to tell people who may disagree, who either listen to this or, you know, whatever. Trump is not the worst president that we've had in my lifetime. And this is what I was talking about with Nathan the other night. You know, it was Bush. And I've seen the, you know, suppression tactics that a lot of like left or liberal people are advocating for to be used on the far right, used on the left to suppress dissident voices, whether it was against Iraq or like whatever the case may be. Like, it's not a matter of like if the, you know, political tides turn and these laws that you put in place, you know, get used against you. It's a matter of when. That's just the nature of the US political system. You know, it's incredibly unstable. It flips all the time. Like, nothing really ever changes. The political elite and establishment are completely unified around a general consensus. And all that this is going to do by advocating this censorship is not break apart the Republican Party like these people think. It's just going to make it so that any voices that depart from the existing status quo are the ones that need to be suppressed, left or right. Doesn't matter.
I mean, I think it just sets a scary precedent, the takeover of the Capitol, because it's really just going to cause like a security state crackdown like we've never seen before. Like, we thought the Patriot Act was bad, but like, we're going to see some pretty bad shit, I think, come out of the Biden administration with this. Like, I'm just not like really like since Biden has taken office, I've seen, you know, a lot more cops out. I've seen just police cars like everywhere in the city, like downtown. Like, I've seen
what does that have to do with Biden? What?
I don't know if it has anything to correlate with him taking office, but I definitely have noticed that there's been a lot more police presence in the cities, like in the city, like where I live.
Like, you think they're on edge or something? Yeah. I mean, I guess like maybe that's the case. Who knows? I think the most infuriating thing, honestly, about all of the like security state apparatus shit that could potentially come out of this is that it's like, how can any American with functioning brain cells be advocating for that shit when we have spent my entire fucking lifetime just shoveling, you know, just planefuls of fucking money into all these programs and all these departments to crack down on security threats in the United States, terrorism threats, blah, 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 like whatever the case may be. And all it took was some angry Trump supporters to storm into the Capitol and start seizing property and destroying shit like that easily, like, you know, and now we're going to use it as a further justification of pumping even more fucking money into this. Like, I just want to bang my head into a wall sometimes, you know, like, because I don't know what. It's like we've seen a complete reversal of who is advocating for what in this country from the Bush administration to now.
And I sent you that like graph not too long ago showing you like, what are you most likely to die from? And like,
right.
Terrorism is like just on the, just the very, it's like the 16th 0.03%. Or 17th, like 0.03% of deaths, yeah, or something. And it's like so far back, whereas like most of the top four are all like public health concerns and things like that, like easily preventable diseases and shit like that, that we could actually be focused on as a society. But instead we spend so much time talking about like terrorism and like foreign wars and shit. But when you look at like the number of people who like have actually died from it, these types of things, it's like minuscule. It's crazy to think that like half our budget in the US goes to stopping this type of shit. And it has like just the smallest impact on all of our lives overall. It is like the pinnacle of spectacle when it really comes to U.S. politics.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's an excuse to further inflate a budget that is already extremely inflated, that a lot of people are making a ton of fucking money off of. And it furthers a geopolitical interest that more people will make a ton of fucking money off of.
That's the ultimate conclusion, I think, here. It's just like, in this society, there's no real ultimate end. Like, there's no one fighting ultimately for the common good. Everyone is kind of just like self-interested. And you can talk about like human nature and all that crap, but ultimately, I just don't think that this society that we live in is like in congruence with like nature or any semblance of like what I view a healthy society to be. Like, everyone is kind of just like, whether they're completely just enamored by the Bernie memes or like spaced out, like they just don't have enough mental energy after their work day to really do much of anything beyond just like pay attention to memes or like follow the news cycle. Like, it's just existentially scary sometimes for me to think about like how not only disjointed and atomized our entire society is, but how easily like amused and like confused we are by just the lack of coherence in general in our narratives, in our politics, in everything. Like, even the market, like nothing under capitalist society like really makes any coherent sense. Like, it's all expressly for the sake of people being free to exploit each other. And I think if you take that central principle in context of like everything else, that's the only way that it can really make any coherent sense. Like, if you see capitalist society like I do, in the sense that it's all just structured for the sake of like maximum exploitability of all people and maximum greed, maximum ability to just do whatever with no recourse or no consideration for the environment, no consideration for any other group of people or one person. That's really the only way that everything that's been going on makes coherent sense to me. Only when you look at capitalist society in that context of just like, you know, the most exploitable, most unregulated, most incoherent narrative society possible.
Well, speaking of existential mind viruses and where they might originate from, Twitter also censored in quotes, Donald Trump, which obviously generated like a massive discussion over the past, I don't know, fucking 2 weeks to a month now. And I don't know, I have a lot of thoughts on it, but what do you think? I'm curious as to your thoughts, Nathan, because I know this is like something I feel like you've probably wrestled with some similar thoughts that I have.
Oh man, I guess like what frustrates me, and I know we've talked about this in the past, is like, this is one of those things that leftists and like right wingers have sort of come to agree on, is that like Twitter and Facebook are absolutely too powerful. You know what I mean? But what's annoying is like having to sort of admit it on their terms, like having them come around and being finally like, oh yeah, they're too powerful now. They took down Daddy Trump. Now it's gotten too bad. We need to do something about it. Like trying to imagine yourself working with the worst kinds of people imaginable on a situation that is like, in my mind, like so minuscule compared to like things like healthcare or college and stuff. It's like, this is the issue you guys want to come together on. And the thing is, it's like, this issue is like shattering your ideology. Like, you guys worship the free market and now you realize like, oh, it doesn't always work. Oh, what do you know? Has anybody ever been preaching this for hundreds of years? Like, who would have thought that the free market could fail us, you know? And it's like, yeah, you guys can see it because social media is in your face all the time. But like, what about all the industries where it's always been failing us, like healthcare or again, education and things like that, just as the two easiest examples. It's like, you know, like it's frustrating to me to sort of remain principled about it, because it does make me feel a little bit frustrated that like this is the one thing that we have to come together on, because it honestly, viscerally, it does feel amazing to see Trump get banned from Twitter. I'm like, oh, fuck yeah. But then like inside of me is like, this is also kind of weird. Like I feel a little bit skeevy about it, you know, and that's, I guess right. That's my take on it so far.
Well, I think I share similar views, and we were talking about this the other night, is it's like, look, the reality is obviously like Twitter is a private company. They can do whatever they want on their platform. And I think that, you know, I don't believe they did it out of like a genuine concern. I think they did it because they know Trump's leaving office and he's not going to boost their attention and drive anymore. And so, you know, now they're like, okay, now we can part with this guy finally. But, you know, that's just my personal thought. But I mean, at the end of the day, they have the right to do whatever they want. The issue becomes when you have a monopoly on political discourse in the United States, predominantly online, because that's just a fact. Like Twitter has now become a major public space, and they have the ability to take someone off, not only take someone off that they don't like the views of, but then also remove any alternative place they might go to talk or whatever, or spout their shit, like Parler. They also have the ability to get that removed from other platforms. And that is when I start to say, okay, Twitter can do whatever it wants in the sense that it's a private company. However, if it has that much authority and power, along with Google and Amazon, then they need to be broken up. You know, even though I don't like the views of Trump and what he says, I just know the precedent it's setting, again, going back to what we were talking about before. But it's been incredible, like, talking with some of my family members who are Trump supporters and them being like, oh, you know, fuck Twitter and Facebook. And, you know, I can't believe, you know, they're too big and they, you know, censored, you know, our grand emperor, Donald Trump. But then I'm like, okay, that's fine and great that you say all that. Are you aware that you voted for all the people that passed laws that gave companies like Twitter, Amazon, and Facebook the ability to be as massive and corrupt and gigantic and monopolized as they are and have that authority and have that power over civic engagement, if you want to call it that, I guess, you know, like, it's truly mind-numbing, because it's at all angles in which you take this. If you have any nuanced approach or you have a particular principled approach based on something that you just hold, you know, as a certain set of values that you stand behind, it feels like you're a nut job, you know, because there's not really anyone there on your side. It's very much like, you know, censor these people we don't like, and as soon as the right takes control, they'll do the exact same thing back to everyone else.
Yeah. It's just like tit for tat. Maximum competition, minimum cooperation. We'll be right back.